Good morning and welcome to A Penny for Your Thoughts with Brian Barnhart on News Talk 1400 WDWS. For over 60 years, East Central Illinois' daily gathering spot for conversation, dialogue, and ideas. You can join out on the phone, online, or via text. Our phone number is 217-356-9397. Email talk at wdws.com. Or text us on the Castle Heating and Cooling text line, 217-351-5357. Filling in for Brian this morning is Scott Beatty.
Well, good morning, everybody, and welcome into Wednesday. I appreciate everybody being along this week. It's a spring break week for a lot of folks around here, certainly at the University of Illinois in Parkland and many of the school districts, but it's felt like a full week as we had election night coverage that went all the way till close to midnight, and we didn't know what to expect with a primary, and sometimes things kind of trickle in and out, and sometimes, you know, we wondered if we would be done early last night or if it would be a long night. And it was. It was a night that we here in the biz kind of relish. You only get to do that so often, even though you kind of get a short night of sleep. You enjoy all the buzz that is coming through. And it was a very interesting night in primaries. And we'll get into that in a little bit here in the first hour as we process what happened last night and how things go forward here. We'll have some time for an open line, so we'll welcome your calls, 356-9397. As always, Castle Heating and Cooling text line is 351-5357. It's my final day with you this week here on Penny. Brian is back tomorrow and the rest of the week. I believe Jim Dye is with him tomorrow. And he'll get back in it after getting a little bit of time off. I'll get my time off this week here to enjoy a little bit of spring break time with the family before diving back in again on Monday. And in the afternoons, you hear me on the News Hour and Sports Talk. So be back at it with you then. This afternoon, a programming note, Illinois baseball, first pitch against CSU Northridge. Dave Lone will be on the call, so you'll hear that this afternoon. And then our afternoon programs follow after that. We are anticipating a conversation with Patsy Petrie. She lost in the primary last night as an incumbent in the Champaign County Board District 6 seat to Mike Ingram, who will take on Richard Montgomery in November. And we may also get a few others who were players last night in the election as well. And we hope to bring them on to you as we get them. In the 10 o'clock hour, we will shift from what is happening to what has happened in a way. Sam Wheeler will talk with us from a little bit. He's from the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library and Museum over in Springfield. A new exhibit is coming out about the four presidents who are tied with the state of Illinois, Grant, Lincoln, Obama, and Reagan, and some really interesting exhibits that are going to be over there. And maybe in the next few weeks, if you've got time off, you might want to go see that. So he'll tell us about that. And then at 10:30, Jennifer Hain Tepper, she's a preservationist from the U of I and the U of I Library. She's going to stop in to tell us about an event coming up where you can bring your questions about preserving, but she's certainly open to your questions right now about those as well. So if you have something that you are curious about how you might preserve for sentimental reasons, or maybe it's a very valuable item, she might be able to help you with that, so you can weigh in there at 10:30. So we will not do all politics today, at least not all current politics, and we'll talk U.S. presidents in Illinois and things that are of value as well. 356-9397 is the number to call, and we do have somebody already weighing in this morning. It is Don. Good morning, Don.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Doing fine. What's on your mind this morning?
I just wanted to say, with the bombings in Texas, they should make those illegal. They say that'll work with guns. They should do that with bombs, too.
Well, I'm pretty sure they are illegal.
It didn't stop them, did it? And with the resource officer stopping the mass shooting, I believe it was yesterday in the school, is there going to be any vigils or parades for that? You guys in the media need to push a different agenda. There should be parades for that guy. That guy should be a hero. You should know his name. Do you know his name?
I do not know his name.
He should be on TV everywhere. That guy should, there should be parades for that guy. He stopped a shooting in the middle of a shooting. If it wasn't for him, there would have been way more people shot, and the country needs to know that.
All right, thanks for weighing in.
Hey, when you have, you know, talk about the election, one thing I am interested in is Champaign County. I heard last night, I mean, that there was like 65% Democrats voted. Now, I want to know what the normal percentage is in a primary.
Say that on the Democratic side or just overall?
Yeah, I mean, on the Democratic side. I mean, because, you know, they're trying to create this persona that there's going to be a blue wave in the next president election. And I'm just curious, when they try to pump up how many Democrats showed up this time, I'm just curious of what the norm is.
I know Tom Kasich looked at those numbers, and thanks for the call, Don. And I think it was a higher turnout for a mid-cycle election, as I recall, but not as much for a presidential cycle. So, and I'm certainly the gubernatorial race also comes into that. You know, I don't know the name of the school resource officer, but I do remember the teacher that subdued a would-be gunman in Mattoon last year, Angela McQueen. She was a teacher. So you're right. We should probably be more aware of all those people who do heroic activities, but at least to be aware of what's going on in our area and all that. Appreciate the call, 356-9397. We're off and running here on A Penny for Your Thoughts, our midweek edition. We'll be back. 9:15, 28 degrees, Penny for Your Thoughts on this Wednesday. Scott Beatty filling in for Brian Barnhart. Last night in the primary elections for Champaign County Board District 6, incumbent Patsy Petry, a former board chair as well, was defeated by Mike Ingram. He had 50% of the vote, and Patsy Petry had 38%. Michael Kaiser from our newsroom is here as well, and we are pleased to be joined by Patsy Petry on the phone. Patsy, I appreciate, first of all, just your class here in making an appearance after a defeat. I know that's never easy, so thank you so much for a bit of your time this morning.
Good morning, Scott. How are you?
Doing well. How do you take this all in? You know, not all the time can you keep getting reelected, but so things come to an end. How do you take this in?
Well, I'm disappointed in the results, and the main reason I'm disappointed in the results is that I was looking forward to working on the new format, the reorganization of how the county government will be put in place as of the 1st or 2nd of December of 2018. I think that'll be very interesting, and as an urban planner, I was looking forward to being involved with that because I think that will result in some very interesting papers to be given at conferences.
So this means you'll finish out your term without having a new term. Do you feel like you can look forward here and have a productive remainder of your term without having a future on the board?
Well, I think so. There's approximately 8 months left, and the county has some very serious issues to focus upon and move forward with. We can't delay that any longer. The nexus of the election swung around the nursing home issue, and next after that comes what will be done in relationship to satisfying the Department of Justice, the ADA requirements, and the downtown jail. So those are two huge issues.
Michael Kaiser is with us here from our newsroom. Patsy, a longtime reporter covering the Champaign County Board. Michael?
Patsy.
Hi, Michael. How are you?
Good. How are you?
All right.
Good. I wanted to see, like, you know, what do you think the difference was in your race that allowed Mike Ingram to win?
Well, that's really hard to answer because there was no experiment run on it, but I think the big push was the nursing home and the argument that the nursing home can stay within the county without taking into deep account exactly what the strains are on the county finances and the county budget. And I have always argued that I wanted to work toward a way to make that nursing home financially stable. And I did try to do that in 2016 with that referendum to increase the facility sales tax by a quarter cent. And that would have raised $4.5 million annually. Today, we would have had $5.6 million more in the general fund. And out of that $4.5 million, 40% of that we projected would have been generated by people coming into our county for events, conferences, et cetera. And had those who, over the time and today, keep saying we need to keep it into the county had helped get that passed, we wouldn't have even be having our conversation today about the nursing home.
So you feel like the nursing home was the potentially the deciding factor, obviously without asking each individual voter, but do you feel like potentially was a deciding factor in your race?
Well, several things came out as I canvassed, which I knocked on just under 1,000 doors, and I'm very impressed with how informed district constituents are on the issues of the nursing home, the finances, recognizing what the finances are doing to challenge the county, and the issue of the downtown jail. In this weather, that was about all the time one had to talk to people because the weather during this campaign period was rather challenging, as you well know.
Yeah.
It's a Penny for Your Thoughts here this morning. I'm Scott Beatty filling in for Brian Barnhart. Michael Kaiser is here with me, and we are talking with Patsy Petrie, who was defeated last night in the primary for the Champaign County District 6 primary on the Democratic side. Michael?
Patsy, as you look at this, you mentioned that, you know, you've been the chairperson before, and that there's, you wanted to have some of the things you wanted to do. Where does the board go from here? The other race where the incumbent lost as well, you weren't the only incumbent county board member to lose last night. Do you think maybe voters are wanting some fresh faces on the board, some fresh voices on the board during some difficult financial times right now, which are well known?
Well, I think that was some of what you read in the newspaper after the presidential election. Young people organized and said that there's a need for fresh faces. As Lorraine Cowart mentioned to me about a week ago, there's concern that people and fresh faces are absolutely great, but there's a concern that there's going to be a great loss of institutional history on the county level. And how then will these people learn about the past history to make the best possible decisions for the county?
Patsy, some have noted you have attempted to cross party lines and work on some compromise when your time on the board. Do you see that? Do you see yourself being a casualty of compromise at all as you look back now on your time on the board?
I think my District 6 compatriot feels very strongly that I was lining up with Republicans when I was always voting, asking myself two questions. One is, what is in the best interest of the county on this particular issue? And subset of that is, what is the best use of the taxpayer dollars in relationship to the county? Because we all know that the county's budget is extremely tight, and there's only four ways for the county to raise money for the county, and the chance of any of those four ways at this point in time in our economy of passing are very, very small. So you have to just keep in mind, how are we best using the taxpayer dollars?
Patsy, regardless of political affiliation, I always want to thank those who take some time for public service and appreciate your graciousness here in defeat as well. Thank you for joining us this morning.
thank you for letting me have a moment of being able to thank the voters for coming out to vote and for giving me 8 years to do things for the benefit of the county. I appreciate that very much.
Take care.
Thanks, Patsy.
Bye-bye.
Okay, Patsy Petrie, she's on the Champaign County Board in District 6 and will be for the next 8 months until she is replaced by either Richard Montgomery or Mike Ingram. Michael Kaiser, appreciate you joining in as well.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
We got more Penny for Your Thoughts. We were just informed that Betsy Dirksen-Londrigan, she won the primary on the Democratic side in the 13th Congressional District. She will face Rodney Davis this November. She will join us after the news at the bottom of the hour. It's a Penny for Your Thoughts. We're back with more in a moment.
Today, the popular revolt against the political ruling class fell just a bit short.
For those of you around the state of Illinois who wanted to send me a message, let me be clear. I have heard you. I have traveled the state, and I have listened to you.
And I will take every inch of Illinois back from Bruce Rauner.
Some of the sounds from the speeches last night in the governor's races. You heard Jeannie Ives and then Governor Bruce Rauner and then J.B. Pritzker. Bruce Rauner, a narrow victory over Jeannie Ives in the Republican primary. And J.B. Pritzker defeating Daniel Biss and Chris Kennedy among three other Democratic candidates in the Democratic side. So it'll be J.B. Pritzker against Bruce Rauner, the incumbent, come November. And it's 230 days until November 8th. When the general election takes place, one thing you can probably be sure is it won't be too long until we start hearing more political ads. Welcome in to A Penny for Your Thoughts. I'm Scott Beatty, filling in for Brian Barnhart. And we have Betsy Dirksen-Londrigan joining us. She won the Democratic primary in the 13th. She will be with us coming up in a few minutes. In the 10 o'clock hour, we shift gears from politics of the present, at least, to the past, with presidents from the state of Illinois. And Sam Wheeler from Abraham Lincoln Presidential Museum and Library. He'll tell us about an interesting new exhibit out there and some of the really cool artifacts, in fact, that you can go see. And in 10:30, you got something you want to keep and make sure it stays in good shape. You can get some help with that with a preservationist from the University of Illinois. To the phones here at 356-9397 and Bobby. Good morning, Bobby.
Hey, good morning, Scott.
Good morning to you.
Say that again.
I'm just saying good morning to you.
Yes, sir. Good morning. Good morning. Good morning. It is a good morning. But anyway, there was a caller that called in about 3 weeks ago. It was a lady, and I just want to rebuttal what she said. She said, "We are all American." That's what she said. We are all Americans, she said. There is no black American. There is no white American. There is no Asian American. We are all Americans. I want to bust a bubble by saying that African Americans have been trying to be Americans for nearly 400 years and was denied. Being accepted as Americans. Now, we are now proud black Americans, and we want to accept ourselves as ourselves, as not by being identified by no other ethnic group. We are all American and proud to be.
I appreciate it, Bobby. And I think that's a valid point. I think that is a valid point. You can't just overlook the issue of race with anybody. Okay, we shift gears here to news with Michael Kaiser, and then Betsy Dirksen-Londrigan will join us on the other side of news break. It is Penny for Your Thoughts, 28 degrees at 9:31.
A Penny for Your Thoughts with Brian Barnhart continues on News Talk 1400 WDWS. You can reach out to us on the phone at 217-356-9397, email talk at WDWS.com, or text on the Castle Heating and Cooling text line, 217-351-5357.
Scott Beatty filling in for Brian Barnhart. It's 9:35 and 28 degrees. Continuing some of our post-primary election coverage. Last night in the 13th Congressional District Democratic primary race, if I can say it all, Betsy Dirksen-Londrigan is the winner. She defeats Eric Jones, John Ebel, David Gill, and Angel Sides. She'll face Rodney Davis in November in the general election. And Betsy Dirksen-Londrigan joins us now. Good morning, Betsy. Thanks for being on with us, and congratulations on your victory. How are you taking it in?
Oh, thank you. Thanks for having me. Well, it's exciting. You know, last night was a great night. I think it really showed, you know, a lot of work that's been going on for the last 8-9 months. And so it's a good night. And today it's time to regroup, refocus, and get moving.
You had a formidable field that you faced, and particularly in Eric Jones and John Ebel, taking nothing away from the other candidates, but in terms of votes received. How did you defeat them? What was the difference maker?
You know, I think that we were very organized, and our get out the vote effort was solid. And I'll tell you what, this is, you know, it's been a long road. And the reason I always share with people that I have put now almost 30,000 miles in my car getting around the district, I think that is reflected in these numbers, making sure that I got to every county and stood in front of people and listened and really paid attention to their issues and concerns is important.
Well, amongst the issues that you heard from the Democratic side, what were the most important ones that you keyed in on and heard from them? Because I want to ask you in a moment about expanding the look to the entire district here.
What? I'm sorry, cut out for a second.
I apologize there. Amongst the Democratic voters that you talked with in your campaign time, what were the most important issues for them?
Health care, jobs, education. I mean, that has been, you know, it doesn't matter where in the district that I go, it's those issues. People are very worried about, can they afford their doctor's visit? You know, what about their cost of their medicine? Are they going to be able to help their kids get an education that's not going to leave them buried in debt? These are real, everyday concerns.
Your opponent, Rodney Davis, has some experience now in his district, and he has a record of working with agriculture, and this is a heavily agricultural district. Obviously, you have several universities in your district as well. And then also has a track record of working with veterans. How do you want to approach those issues and those issues that are important to those constituents?
Well, I'll tell you, from my time in the field so far and listening to voters, honestly, whether I'm over in Hardin or whether I'm over in Champaign, healthcare has been a motivating issue for every voter. And that's going to be an overarching concern throughout the campaign, and making sure that I do meet with farmers and that I do meet with veterans and listen to additional concerns that they have that's something I've been doing. It's something I plan on doing, and making sure that I am available and accessible to constituents.
Your new opponent has wanted to bring in reform to the ACA, if not throwing the entire thing out. Where do you see yourself differing from your Republican opponent now in the matter of health care?
Well, I mean, he worked really hard to try to take health care away from people. And, you know, for me, that is a very personal issue. And people know that when I talk about it, it's authentic. I want to make sure that no one loses someone they love because they can't get to a doctor or they can't, you know, afford their medicine. And I believe that we need to first stabilize what we have, and then we can move forward. We cannot move backwards in time, back to the dark ages when insurance companies got to determine who can or can't get insurance, or price the policies for people with pre-existing conditions so high that they're unaffordable. We cannot move backwards.
Betsy, I imagine there's going to be some voters going forward that you've already won over by virtue of your party, by virtue of the campaign work you've already done. And there's some that you won't win because they are going to vote solidly red and for Rodney Davis. Who are the ones in the middle? Where do you think you will find them? And how will you go after winning their vote?
Well, you know, I plan on representing everybody. And with health care being the number one issue on voters' minds, let me just remind everyone that pre-existing conditions don't pick political parties. It affects all of us. So making sure that everyone, Democrat, Republican, Independent, you know, it doesn't matter who you are, where you're from, everyone deserves quality, affordable health care.
Betsy Dirksen-Londrigan is the new nominee for the Democratic side in the 13th Congressional District race, and she will oppose incumbent Rodney Davis in November. Betsy, congratulations on the win. I imagine it was a celebratory night, but also a short one, so we appreciate you being with us here early this morning.
You know, thank you. Thank you for having me, and I do want to make sure that I thank Eric and David and John, who I spent an extraordinary amount of time on the campaign trail with. I have such deep respect for each of them, and I'll tell you, they each called last night. We had great conversations, and they are on board to help, you know, to help through the general election and beyond. I think they're going to be very valuable, active members of our team.
Thank you, Betsy, for your time. Good luck.
Thank you. Have a great day. Bye.
You as well. It's a penny for your thoughts, and we appreciate a few of the candidates here with us this morning, one on the winning side, one on the losing side of a primary election, to be with us here in the first hour. It's 9:41. We have an open line the rest of the way to the top of the hour, but we are going to talk for a moment with Whitney Emmert as well about the People's Choice, a new venture that is coming out here from News Gazette Media and Newstalk 1400. We'll get some details on that along the way. You can weigh in also. Join us here on A Penny for Your Thoughts. I love this tune. Penny for Your Thoughts, 9:45, 31 degrees. Glad you are along. I'm Scott Beatty filling in for Brian Barnhart and with you here till 11 o'clock. Brian's back in the chair tomorrow and the rest of the week and the weeks after that for the foreseeable future as we kind of split up this spring break week. Whitney Emmert is our marketing manager here for News Gazette Media and Newstalk 1400, and she has joined in. People's Choice is something that has been unveiled today, Whitney, and I know you're behind this effort. It's been a long project so far, hasn't it?
It's been quite a long project. I just actually said today, oh my gosh, it's actually here. It's today. I've been waiting for this for so long.
All right, so fill us in if you're not familiar with the People's Choice.
Okay, so the People's Choice is a nomination and voting platform. So if you have a favorite restaurant or coffee shop or dry cleaner or daycare or anything under the sun, you can go online to the News Gazette website or WDWS and click the People's Choice logo that is right there, should be prominently displayed right on the front page. And you can nominate those businesses. Nominations will be open until the 30th of March. And after that, on April 2nd, we open voting. So we encourage people to go in and voting. You can vote once a day per category. So go online as much as possible and go vote.
You can go to Newstalk 1400's website, WDWS.com, the News Gazette website as well. And it's kind of a bluish background with a yellow check mark is kind of the signature logo. It says nominate your favorites. Now, is there categories for people around town or is it all businesses and organizations?
For this year, we decided to keep it to just businesses and organizations, but it's something that this is our first year ever doing this. So we wanted to start, you know, at the bottom and make sure that we make it grow. And when I say start at the bottom, there's 150 categories to choose from. So
so there's no category for favorite mid-morning backup talk show host that fills in on a Wednesday.
No, okay. But there is one for best hair, and we made sure that you're the only name on there. So
I get comments about the hair around here. Just seem to lead that charge, by the way.
I do kind of lead that charge around here. I can't help it. It's just too good.
My hair has been compared to a former Illinois governor who's currently in jail in Rod Blagojevich. And we both have a lot of hair. I think that's the only comparison that I probably should desire to have drawn between me and him.
But. right. We'll just keep it a fine line of the hair.
All right, so all kinds of businesses. Now, the categories are already set, right? So it's just pick the business within the category.
Yes, and if, let's say, you go on to favorite breakfast spot and your favorite breakfast spot in your town isn't listed there, well, then there's a little bar at the bottom, and you can type in their information and nominate them.
Oh, that's pretty cool. Okay, and I've seen this kind of thing around other towns I've visited. So what do you get if you win?
So
besides a whole lot of pride.
Right, exactly. So we are going to be coming out with a People's Choice magazine. It will be coming out in August, and it will have full circulation. And you, with the businesses who win the coveted first prize, will be going to their place of business, presenting them with an award, and do a lot of celebrating and things of that nature. So we'll be going to 150 businesses to present awards to them. They get a trophy. We also have window clings that we're going to do that has the People's Choice logo, so they can predominantly display it right in their window. So, and plus they get
This is across the whole area, right?
This is for all of East Central Illinois. We wanted to make sure that we weren't just tying it to Champaign or just Urbana, because there's so many great communities around the area. I myself was, you know, raised in Danville, and I also have ties in Georgetown, and there's some great businesses in there that I've already nominated. So I want to make sure that everybody is able to celebrate their hometown pride.
All right. Some of the categories: arts and entertainment, health and wellness, food and dining, of course. And there's all kinds of subcategories to that, whether it's your favorite sushi place, favorite burger place, favorite breakfast joint, all those kinds of, even your favorite town.
Right.
And you break that up into the friendliest place in the area, best place to raise a family, best place for a night out, best downtown, all those kinds of things.
Exactly. So we really want people to kind of be a cheerleader for their hometown.
Pretty cool. Okay, Whitney, thanks for bringing us up to speed. Nominations are open until when again?
Until March 30th.
Head to our website, wdws.com, and also the News Gazette website, news-gazette.com, to start nominating. Whitney, come again anytime.
Thanks, Scott Beatty.
It is 31 degrees at 9:50, an open line the rest of this hour here on A Penny for Your Thoughts. It's A Penny for Your Thoughts. I'm Scott Beatty here until 11 o'clock with you. Brian is back in his regular chair beginning tomorrow morning. Ed Bond is our producer engineer. Thanks to Ed for all this good work here. Weigh in if you have any thoughts here, 356-9397. That's 356-WDWS. And you can also email us at talk@wdws.com. Of course, the text line always popular at 351-5357. Thanks to Castle Heating and Cooling. 217 texter says, yes, I know that Mike Ingram, a Democrat, is going up against Richard Montgomery, a Republican for the Champaign County Board District 6. But will Tanisha King-Taylor, who beat Chris Storr last night in District 10, face any Republican for that seat or not? And yeah, the answer is yes. David Weisiger is the Republican in District 10 to face Tanisha King-Taylor, who won with 62% of the Democratic vote last night. Curious to know your thoughts on on the governor's race now, with Bruce Rauner narrowly beating Jeannie Ives. And, as always in the primaries, it seems on both sides of parties, it's a competition to say who's more conservative than the other on the one side, or who's more progressive and liberal on the other side. And Jeannie Ives basically ran on that, saying Governor Rauner had given up on some principles and some ideals. I think he took a lot of heat for his abortion stances there, and the bill that he would not, the abortion rights that some thought he would not protect. So now he says the message has been heard. Well, I'm curious to know what Governor Rauner how he will respond to that message, as when you go to a general election, you generally have to move towards the middle of your, rather than to just your right or your left and your base. How do you see it? If you've been a supporter of Governor Rauner, are you confident in him going forward? Are you nervous about that? If you've not been a Rauner fan, but you are a Republican, what do you think about the chances going forward? If on all that, you can certainly weigh in on your thoughts. And it's going to be a very expensive race. You're projecting this could be the most expensive one in the history of the state, and maybe outpace a record set in the state of California as well. They had a very expensive one out that. And, you know, Governor Rauner, whatever he wants to spend, J.B. Pritzker can spend it as well. These are, I mean, it seems to not matter when you're talking about the amount of money they both have, but J.B. Pritzker is even richer than Governor Bruce Rauner. So there is going to be a lot of ads. There's going to be a lot of stuff out there. And I think, you know, it'd be a challenge, too, for voters to not just listen to the pitches, but to wade through that and listen to the substance that comes from the candidates in not only the governor's race, but all of the races. Erica Harold is the Republican nominee for attorney general, and she has used the charisma and her Harvard background and as a lawyer and really worked the state hard and won this Republican nomination. And she goes against Kwame Raoul, who has a backing from the Democratic and Chicago establishment. So that will be, I think, an interesting race. And we'll see. I'm not sure how folks view the attorney general's race, you know, when it comes to party. I'm sure there are folks who are one side of the aisle or the other and will just vote that way. But how much does party matter to you when you look at the attorney general's seat compared to other lawmaking seats out there, like a governor or your representatives or state senators? We talked with Betsy Dirksen-Londrigan here this morning. She's going to represent Rodney Davis. Excuse me. I've been talking a lot here in the last 24 hours. She's going to represent the Democratic side on the ticket against Rodney Davis for the 13th. In the 15th Congressional District, which encompasses a lot of Champaign County outside of CU, and then Vermilion County and the southeastern part of the state, it'll be Kevin Gaither on the Democratic side against John Shimkus. John Shimkus has held that seat for many, many years. So it'll be, as many presume, it will just continue to be a red district. You never know. We'll see how those things play out. 6th Judicial Circuit, Randy Rosenbaum, a winner over Sammy Anderson. Randy will face Chad Beckett in that. Also, some new folks in the 101st and 104th State House races. Dan Calkins, a winner in the Republican side. He will face Jennifer McMillan for the 101st and 104th. Cindy Cunningham will take on Mike Marin in the 104th. Cindy Cunningham defeating Frank McAuliffe. Probably the tightest race locally last night was that for the Republican nominee for Champaign County Clerk, Matt Grandoni, edging John Rector with 6,423 votes against 5,776. That's 53% to 47%. And the winner will face Aaron Ammons come November. Champaign County Sheriff in the Republican primary, Alan Jones, a landslide victory over Greg Worrell, with nearly 9,000 votes, and Greg Worrell with about 2,900 of those votes. And right now, no Democrat opponent. So unless a Democrat is appearing on the ticket in November, Alan Jones has a clear path to become the Champaign County Sheriff, and he's been in that office for many, many years. So those were some of the things going on last night in the primary election. Next hour, we shift gears a bit. We'll hear about a new exhibit coming up in Springfield at the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Museum and Library. State historian Sam Wheeler will join us and hear about the four presidents with Illinois ties as the museum makes this a centerpiece to the Illinois Bicentennial. At 10:30, get your questions ready. If you have something you've wanted to preserve, Jennifer Hayne Tepper from the University of Illinois can help you with that, or maybe steer you towards somebody else that can. If she can't, she'll take your questions. And we'll hear about some of the things you might want to do to preserve sentimental items that you have, maybe an old letter, a card, maybe something else, an object that's of value. So those things are all coming up here on the second hour of A Penny for Your Thoughts. We'll take your calls and texts on anything else in between. CBS and local news in just a moment. You're listening to News Talk 1400 WDWS Champaign-Urbana, a News Gazette media station. It is 31 degrees, going to a high of 45. Well, we've been talking the first hour about all the politics going on right now, but we're going to shift gears to the politics that used to go on and the presidents who have been a part of the state of Illinois. So pleased to have with us on the phone Sam Wheeler. He's a state historian with the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library and Museum. Hello, Sam. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing great. It's great to be with you this morning.
Now, if memory serves me right, we talked not too long ago about an exhibit over there in Springfield regarding the Cubs and the Cardinals. Did I talk with you about that?
You sure did. Yeah, that was a great exhibit that we had. It had a great run for most of the year of 2017, but we're awful excited about our new one.
Yeah, this is From Illinois to the White House, Lincoln, Grant, Reagan, Obama. And you look, and that looks like chronological order there. You look at the ties between these four presidents and the state of Illinois. And first of all, an overview. What are you attempting to do with this exhibit? Because there's a lot of directions you could go, especially with a guy. Well, it's the Abraham Lincoln Museum. You've already got a lot dedicated to him. So what are you trying to focus in on?
Yeah, so for the bicentennial year, we had so many conversations about what exhibit would we showcase, 200 years of Illinois history. And so we hit on this concept of focusing on the four presidents who called Illinois home. And what role did Illinois play in their rise to national leadership? Illinois, you mentioned the four presidents, Lincoln, Reagan, Grant, Obama. Certainly those are four pretty significant national figures that Illinois has grown here. And so it's not really a cradle to the grave, biography of the four presidents. It's more we're sort of looking at different episodes in their life and finding connections. So in our exhibit, we focus on, their earliest days in Illinois. Ronald Reagan was the only one of those four presidents who was born in Illinois. The rest of them came to Illinois for opportunity in various capacities. We talked about some of the connections between them. They're great communicators, all four of them. They're known for their eloquence. Great speakers, wrote great speeches. Grant, we don't really recognize him as a great speech maker, but his memoirs that he wrote right before his death have gone down as one of the best autobiographies in American history, probably the best autobiography in presidential history. We have a section where we're focusing on the first ladies, their partners as they came to national leadership. And you're right to say that Lincoln at our museum certainly, I don't want to say overshadows them, but he's always a significant character in all three of the other president's stories. And so our exhibit ends with a section we call Getting Right with Lincoln. These presidents, just because they have a Illinois connection, they go on to national leadership, they're always being compared to Abraham Lincoln. And it's interesting to sort of reflect on how these individuals had used the Lincoln legacy, and nobody used it more prominently than Barack Obama as he was running for the presidency. So a neat little section there.
Yeah, Obama declaring he was running for president on the steps of the old Capitol in Springfield. It was not subtle in what he was trying to do there. But I want to ask about U.S. Grant first, because I think of the four, he may be the one that's least discussed or remembered as a president. When I think back to my U.S. history class, I think more of him as a Union general than a president.
Sure.
How is history remember him as a president?
Oh, that's a great question. So the thing that always attracted me to history is the idea that our interpretations of the past change over time. And so Ulysses S. Grant is one of those figures that his historical reputation, particularly his presidency, has changed over time. He's enjoying sort of a resurgence, if you will. If you go to Barnes & Noble, you'll find a couple new biographies about Ulysses S. Grant that are pretty complimentary to his presidency. The Chernow book is certainly a good one, and Ron White's book about Ulysses S. Grant, I think, is phenomenal. In our exhibit, we focus certainly some on his presidency, but as you can imagine, a Civil War museum, we do talk about his role in saving the Union. And so just some of the artifacts that folks will see in this exhibit are amazing. And the ones connected with Ulysses S. Grant, I've gotten to see him this week as we've been loading them into the gallery. We have the surrender table that was at Appomattox Courthouse when Robert E. Lee surrendered his army to Ulysses S. Grant. Talk about a piece that is so significant in American history. That one was a real showstopper when we unveiled that one.
Now, how do you first obtain such a piece, and then how is it handled? I mean, how do you... I assume you don't just throw it into the back of the U-Haul and put a blanket over
yeah.
it. How is it handled in transport? How is it handled when it gets there?
In any one of these exhibits, partnerships with other institutions are so important. We're lucky to have a world-class institution here. We are able to form some really great partnerships. So in this exhibit, we're working with, for instance, the Ronald Reagan Presidential Library, and that particular object, the surrender table, comes from our friends in Chicago at the Chicago History Museum, where that table has been. And there's all sorts of paperwork. There's all sorts of hoops to jump through in the loan process, as you can imagine. And then you're right, we don't load it up into the back of a of your truck and bring it here. But oftentimes, depending upon the piece, there's fine art shippers that handle things like this. But we're just so fortunate here in Central Illinois to have the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Museum. We have a worldwide reputation, and Abraham Lincoln opened some doors when we call institutions to inquire about borrowing some significant pieces.
The table where Robert E. Lee surrendered at, you don't have you put your coffee cup mug down on that?
No, no. It will be well taken care of throughout the life of the exhibit here. It'll be in a gallery where the not only is it protected from anybody touching it, but you know, we monitor the temperature, the humidity, etc., to make sure that the object will be here hundreds of years into the future, because preserving these amazing pieces of history, that's our number one priority, and then comes the education part and sharing it.
You mentioned the communication aspect of the presidents, and I don't think about that with U.S. Grant, but obviously with Lincoln, with some of the greatest speeches in U.S. history, Ronald Reagan, known as the great communicator, President Barack Obama, regarded for his speaking and oration abilities as well. What do you have in that category?
So with Ronald Reagan, for instance, we have the note cards that he used as he gave his speech when he told Mr. Gorbachev to tear down this wall. I got to see those the other day, and he has an acting background. He's used to delivering lines, and it's really interesting to see his note cards that he used to deliver that speech. In pen, he underlines phrases to accentuate, so that was very interesting to see sort of his process. For Abraham Lincoln, in that section, we have his portfolio, a briefcase that every member of his cabinet during his presidency received. It's black leather with his name, Abraham Lincoln, embossed on the front of it. That's the portfolio that he probably carried drafts of the Emancipation Proclamation in as he was commuting from the old soldier's home where he stayed in the summer to the White House. Pretty amazing artifact there. And then for Barack Obama, we actually have some handwritten corrections that he had made in some of the margins for his speech that he gave at Selma. Again, interesting to see his process. But I can also tell you that on Monday this week, so just a couple days ago, we were able to acquire his Grammy. The Grammy that he won for the audiobook for his classic book, Dreams from My Father. And so that was a very last minute addition to our exhibit that we are thrilled to have. But again, it speaks to his eloquence and really the, you know, from Abraham Lincoln and getting his speeches printed in the newspaper all the way to the 21st century and actually recording an audio book and winning a Grammy for it. Illinois presidents are known for their eloquence.
Sports has also been important to some of the presidents that are on this list with the Illinois ties. Obviously, Barack Obama was always talking about basketball. Ronald Reagan, at one point, was a play-by-play broadcaster for baseball, something near and dear to my heart. What connections do you have and with these presidents in sports in Illinois?
Yeah, so it was an interesting section in this exhibit, and we found some commonalities between these four. They all enjoyed sports, they enjoyed physical activity, and they were shaped by that competition to some degree. So, for instance, Ulysses S. Grant was known for his horsemanship. Even as a young boy, people would bring horses to a young Ulysses S. Grant to break them, to train them so that they can be ridden. And in this exhibit, we'll have a saddle that was used by Ulysses S. Grant during the American Civil War, a beautiful piece. For Abraham Lincoln, we remember him for his wrestling prowess. But also, you know, he was a man that was shaped by physical labor. And so we have the last axe that Abraham Lincoln ever used. And that was used during the final days of the American Civil War. He saw some soldiers chopping wood. Lincoln asked to borrow the axe, and he chopped some of the wood for them. And these soldiers, they said, you know, President of the United States, a 56-year-old man, man, he can really swing an axe. And so we have that axe that will be on display. Ronald Reagan, as you said, had a little bit of a play-by-play career. And he threw out a pitch at Wrigley Field. To start a Chicago Cubs game, will have the jacket, the Cubs jacket that he wore that day in this exhibit. And what I think is one of the coolest pieces in this exhibit related to Barack Obama, he has he's well known for loving basketball. And during his presidency, he had Spalding basketballs with the presidential seal embossed on those basketballs, as well as his name, and we'll have one of those on display as well.
Pretty neat things. This exhibit all opens Friday, correct?
And yeah, we'll have the ribbon cutting ceremony at 10 o'clock on Friday, and it will run throughout the end of the calendar year in 2018, our bicentennial.
Part of your just general admission to the library and museum.
Yes. One cost to get into the museum, and this special exhibit will be in the museum in our Illinois gallery.
For you personally, is there something you're most proud of with this whole exhibit?
Boy, that's a good question.
Or just as a
student
of history. That,
yeah, not necessarily one piece, because I think I've touched on so many really interesting pieces. What I'm really proud of in this exhibit, we started talking this morning about our baseball exhibit, the rivalry, the Cardinal and Cub history in our Illinois gallery that we had in 2017. That was an exhibit near and dear to my heart. A lot of things went right to make that exhibit possible. We took some risks in that exhibit, and I think it worked out great. What I'm proud of in this exhibit is that we created an exhibit that is really worthy of following that one. I'm proud of the way that this exhibit came together. Some of these pieces I think are going to knock people's socks off, and I don't think anybody that walks through there will say that we didn't knock this one out of the park, too.
And doing all this, obviously we have no problem owning Abraham Lincoln as our own here in the state of Illinois. Is there anybody that's underappreciated that maybe the state should take more ownership of in the other three presidents?
Well, I think out of this group, Reagan and Obama certainly are the ones that many of us have personal memories of. And each of those presidents have their fans as well as their detractors. But I think on this list, Ulysses S. Grant is the one that is probably underappreciated. Certainly his role in the American Civil War, his presidency, as we said, it's sort of a legacy that sort of ebbs and flows as time goes on. But one of the things that struck me about Ulysses S. Grant is the role that Illinois played in his rise. One of the first pieces we have on display about Grant in this exhibit is a pawn ticket. It comes from the earliest days of when he moved his family here to Illinois, to Galena. Things were not going well for him, and he pawned his gold watch around Christmas time. And I think that that's a pretty symbolic act, that things were not going well for Grant. And, of course, in just a couple years, Grant rises to national prominence because of the American Civil War. And I think Illinois played a major role in that. If Grant had moved his family to Pennsylvania or New York, would those opportunities have been there for Ulysses S. Grant? So these four men, I think in this exhibit, what's interesting to see is they certainly played significant roles in our state's history, but I think there's something pretty special about the state of Illinois that provided the opportunities for these four individuals.
Sam Wheeler, state historian from the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library and Museum. The new exhibit is From Illinois to the White House, Lincoln, Grant, Reagan, Obama. The exhibit opens on Friday in Springfield. Sam, thank you so much for your time. We'll do it again.
Thank you. I look forward to it.
All right. It is 10:27, 31 degrees here on A Penny for Your Thoughts. In the next half hour, you got something you want to preserve. Maybe you don't have a famous artifact, but something else in your home that's worthy for you or maybe has some value. Jennifer Hayne Tepper is here from the U of I. She'll help us with that. Join us on A Penny for Your Thoughts right after this. It's 10:35, 31 degrees. Scott Beatty here filling in for Brian Barnhart. On Saturday, April 7th, the University of Illinois Preservation Working Group will be hosting a public event called the Preservation Emporium. You can visit with preservation specialists from the U of I who will offer advice on the preservation, treatment, and storage of family heirlooms and other things that you might want to keep. Jennifer Hayne Tepper is a preservationist with the U of I and the U of I Library, and she joins us now. Good to have you here. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Scott.
If you have calls or questions, that is, for Ms. Tepper, you can join in 356-9397. You can text us if you've got questions about how to preserve things. I imagine you've seen it all, but a common one, and it was just brought up here during the break, I have something in the newspaper that I would like to save, an article that mentions me, a picture of my kid playing sports, what have it. How can I keep it? I bet you get that one a lot.
We do. Newspaper preservation is one of the biggest challenges for us, actually, especially at the library, because we have lots of newspapers. Newspapers, unfortunately, are printed on really poor quality paper, because the whole purpose of a newspaper is for it to be inexpensive and more or less ephemeral. Most of us don't keep newspapers. But we do often want to keep particular snippets or clippings from papers. The library, of course, is full of them. So one of the big challenges, the reason that the paper turns brown so fast is because the paper is produced with something called lignin, which is actually an impurity that's part of the wood pulp that paper is made from. Really high quality papers actually remove that lignin, but newspapers, I said, to keep the cost of the paper down, just go ahead and leave that impurity in. That lignin unfortunately reacts with heat, it reacts with light, it reacts with humidity, and so it produces acids, which causes the paper to turn brown and brittle over time. So what we recommend if you want to preserve the original paper, now, of course, getting a better quality print is always an option on better quality paper, but if you want to save the original on the original newsprint paper, the best thing to do is to look for good quality storage, which is a universal recommendation for anything that you want to keep, is good quality storage is key. So keeping it cooler, keeping it drier, not necessarily super dry, but drier, and keeping it somewhere dark so it's not reacting with light, humidity, and heat is key. We recommend storage usually in something like an internal closet in your house, not in an external space, definitely not in basements or attics, which is where most people put their stuff.
The temperature fluctuations there might be.
Exactly, and the humidity, which is honestly even worse than the temperature.
Yeah.
So what we recommend is cool, dark, dry storage. But in addition, because newsprint is so problematic chemically, is to look at something that's going to help to neutralize the acids that the lignin is giving off. And you can do that through storing it in good quality paper materials, specifically something that has what's called an alkaline buffer in it, which means that the paper is basically produced with a chemical very similar to Rolaids or Tums, and those are added to the paper, and they actually help to absorb any of the free acids, much like Rolaids or Tums works on your stomach acids.
Could you get a two-for-one out of that? Could you ingest some of it if you got a stomach ache and preserve?
I wouldn't, no. but you can buy really good quality paper through a variety of either archival or even scrapbooking materials sellers. and store the newsprint in between buffered paper. That will help to reduce the acids and keep the paper longer. They also do have a spray that's put out called Archival Mist that you can buy again through scrapbooking vendors that you can actually spray on the paper, and that puts those alkaline particles into the newsprint itself, and that will actually help to extend the life of the paper as well.
Jennifer Hain-Tepper is here with us. She's a preservationist at the University of Illinois. If you've got your preservation questions, I bet you've seen some really unique things in your time, especially this emporium that you're going to have, or people bring all kinds of stuff. Have you ever gotten, why would you save that? Or I can't believe you saved that, but good for you for saving that.
We've gotten some really unique artifacts that have come through. I man the table that looks at photographs and books and papers. So a lot of what we get, of course, is family photographs, photograph albums, books that people have kept in their family for a long time, particularly Bibles, etc. But the people who do objects and fine art get a lot of really cool stuff, as well as the specialists who man the archaeology table of things that people have dug up or found. I think the most interesting thing within recent memory was somebody had an artillery box from the Civil War that had been passed down from generation to generation through their family. And that was really cool. Just of all the things that they kept, they had this artillery box. So that was really cool.
Wow.
But we've certainly seen a lot of family Bibles, the really cool ones where they have all the births and deaths listed in the front, as well as, you know, little hair clippings and pressed flowers and memorabilia in it. Scrapbooks are always interesting to look at. What's really cool about the event is that people bring in things and they really want to be able to talk about what it means to their family. And what we try to do is to bring groups then around the table so that everybody can look and learn from it. So it's not just necessarily us talking to you about your object, but being able to tell the story of the object and be able to talk with other people and their objects, because you can learn a lot from other people's memorabilia as well.
Well, there's so much emotion around some of these things.
Absolutely.
And you can't help but just go, well, I have this piece of paper. How do I preserve it? You kind of want to tell the history behind it.
Right, because that's what makes it important to people, is the story.
Now, I have some notes and letters from my high school days from a high school girlfriend, and my wife said we can keep it because she was my high school girlfriend there. Well, uh-huh. I actually had another one that I found too, but that was from the one before her, so maybe I'm supposed to throw that out. But as time goes by, you know, you want to preserve some things and maybe show your kids one day, that kind of stuff. So not newspaper, but let's say a birthday card or just some loose leaf paper that somebody wrote a nice note to you. I look at some of this stuff as we were recently trying to purge some things in our basement, and I go, well, I think I should keep this.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there's emotion around the item, and there's also the how do I keep it, and then there's also the do I display it? You know, what are the best things to do if you don't want to take up a lot of space or just throw things in a box
right. That's
going to sit somewhere?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, display is always an option, and maybe not for high school love letters.
But
that is one of the questions that we get a lot is, I'd like to display this. How can I safely display it? One of the big concerns when you're displaying things is going to be the quality of the materials that you use for display. There are a lot of good quality materials out there, but there are also a lot of really bad quality materials out there, and they can actually cause more harm than good. So making sure if you are going to display something, especially with paper and photographs, that you're getting a good quality mat and using good quality mat board that's not going to actually burn the paper, because poor quality mat board can actually leave big brown stains on your objects, which is bad. But in addition, also avoiding any sort of direct light or high UV intensity light wherever you're displaying it. Especially with modern materials, a lot of the inks are not very light stable. I'm sure you have color photographs that have started to shift. Good old-fashioned, like real photographs.
What are those?
The same thing, unfortunately, is going to happen when we print out digital photographs, is a lot of those real color photographs, as well as the digitally printed color photographs, are dye-based. And those dyes, unfortunately, are very unstable when exposed to light. So you need to be really careful when you're displaying either color photographs.
You're talking about sunlight or any light?
Any light, but sunlight is the worst. Sunlight has a really high percentage of ultraviolet light within it, which is why our skin reacts to it when we're out in the sun too long, but dyes react to it as well. The less UV light you have, the less damaging the light is, but even visible light can cause fading. So looking to display things in an area with a reasonably low light intensity, or someplace where lights aren't turned on all the time. So it would be someplace maybe like a dining room or a living room wall that's far away from the windows, where it's only when people are in there that the lights would be on and it would be exposed to the light. They do have glass that's actually UV blocking that can also help to reduce some of the UV radiation. So if you really want to display it someplace where you have natural light coming into your house, you can actually get UV blocking glass to at least cut that down. But so the matting materials and the quality of them, as well as reducing light, are going to be the two big important things.
I want to ask you when we come back about where you can go find some of the stuff, but also some of the other things that aren't so paper-based, like objects mm-hmm. that may be of value, fabric, clothing,
yeah.
and also the digital world is a big one now for
it
people.
It is.
Yeah. So if you can hang through the break, we'll talk about that. If you've got a question for Jennifer Hain-Tepper about something you want to keep and preserve or display, you can join in 356-9397. Texas Castle Heating and Cooling text line 351-5357. Penny for your thoughts. I'm Scott Beatty. We are with Jennifer Hain-Tepper. She's a preservationist from the U of I. They're hosting a preservation emporium on April 7th at the Spurlock Museum on campus on the Urbana side. And you can join them there in the afternoon with your questions or things you want to bring in that you want to make sure are kept for years to come, generations to come. Jennifer, we were talking about paper items. I wanted to shift to objects. What are the big objects that people want to keep? I don't know, might be a piece of artwork, a sculpture, pottery, but dishes, I don't know. What do people want to keep that you see?
Oh, I mean, people want to keep just about everything. I think one of the most common things that we have come in that's not paper-based is going to be quilts. A lot of family quilts, especially in this part of the country. And those are really challenging. So textiles in general are actually very challenging because a lot of textiles, they're more three-dimensional than paper. You can't just put it necessarily in a folder and kind of put it away.
Mm-hmm.
People want quilts out on beds. They want them hung on walls. They have, you know, beautiful old dresses. Myself included have a beautiful collection of, like, dresses from the 10s and 20s that are super fragile, unfortunately, at this point. And so a lot of people have questions about how to better store those and preserve them, not necessarily looking to wearing them, but just keeping them around. Dresses in particular or uniforms can be really challenging because they were worn for so long. You have a lot of sweat stains, dirt, grime, etc. Quilts have been, you know, used for many generations in some cases, and people want to keep care of them. And the first thing that jumps to mind is, well, I'll dry clean it. And that actually can be one of the worst things for historical textiles, unfortunately, because dry cleaning uses some pretty nasty chemicals that don't wash out of the materials. Modern clothing is made to deal with a lot of that, because if it's made to be dry cleaned, the material is robust enough to be able to withstand that. But antique materials are already fragile, and those chemicals can actually speed up deterioration. So we really recommend that if it really needs to be cleaned, just really gentle hand washing and water is really more recommended than dry cleaning.
Without soap?
Without soap or with a very, very gentle detergent. Likewise for quilts, just a very gentle wash, air dry, et cetera, not putting it into the dryer or anything like that like we would with modern textiles. The big thing for textiles is going to be storage, because they're not flat necessarily, and you're going to have to fold them to be able to store them. And so how to properly support them in storage to keep those folds from becoming areas where we can actually cause damage over time, especially with dresses, with fragile dresses. So what we do is we actually recommend that people buy rather deep boxes, and then they, when they fold it, they actually support all the folds with tissue paper, good quality tissue paper, so that we don't get any sharp creases, and that really helps to preserve a lot of the more fragile textiles. But hanging dresses can be or uniforms can be really damaging too, because that puts a lot of strain and stress on the shoulders where the hanger sits, and you want to try to avoid that. So a lot of archival material providers make boxes specifically made for uniforms or dresses or quilt boxes, which are really big, but will give you a better storage environment. And then again, looking cool, dark, dry, etc., good quality materials.
Now, you have a lot of resources at your disposal to preserve things, but if you're not working in a museum or a library, going back to some of the paper products or these other things, mm-hmm. are there places to go? I mean, is it stuff you can find at retail in town, like an arts and crafts store? Do you got to go online? Where would you steer people, particularly if you know, they don't have a huge budget, but they want to preserve some things?
Right. Well, unfortunately, the challenging thing about preservation does take some work, and it does, to do it properly, take some investment. But if these things really matter to you, that investment is worth it. There are some places in town, Michael's, Hobby Lobby, there's some scrapbooking stores that, if you are a careful discerning shopper, you can find good quality materials there, but you can also find poor quality materials. So you need to be really careful. If you're shopping someplace Art Coop is another one. You want to make sure that you're buying materials that are lignin-free, which is that stuff that I was talking about that was in newsprint that makes it so bad. There's a lot of poor quality paper out there, so you want to make sure that the paper you're buying...
Is that usually marked on the labels if it is?
It will be. If they bother to actually remove the lignin, they usually market that because that's a very sellable point. So if it doesn't say it's lignin-free, it probably isn't. So you want to buy materials that are lignin-free and for to storage of almost anything. There are a few exceptions, but almost anything is going to benefit from that alkaline buffer. Paper in particular benefits from this, but honestly, as does cloth, photographs, negatives, etc. All of that benefits from an alkaline environment. The only things that really don't are some really fancy color photography formats, which are not the type that we would have taken, you know, from our family camera or anything like that. But if you bought an art photograph, there are some high quality art photographs that don't do well in alkaline storage. And blueprints or cyanotypes, which are the blue photographs, actually will fade if they're put into alkaline storage. So you want to avoid, if something's blue, perhaps you don't want to go with an alkaline buffer. But even that, lignin free is still really important. If you're looking to buy something like a quilt box or something like that, there really aren't any resources here in town, but there's a lot of materials available online. The one that I usually point people to is a company called Hollinger Metal Edge. Metal Edge is because the boxes are reinforced on the corners with little metal edges. Hollinger is the original name of the company. And they do a wide variety of different types of boxes and folders that you can purchase. With folders, unfortunately, you have to buy them in a certain quantity. You can't just buy one folder. But with boxes, you can usually buy them by the piece. And they're not a good quality... quilt box is going to run, which is the biggest box they make, is generally going to run you somewhere upwards of like $40 or $50. So it's an investment, but it's not huge.
And finally, a lot of our memories are now digital photos and videos. What are some of the best practices for people who come to you and go, okay, well, how do I keep this for the long term and actually not have to be overwhelmed by the volume of stuff that we have saved?
Right. There are a couple different approaches for digital preservation. I myself still print out the photographs that I really want to keep just as a backup. And that way I can enjoy them too. I'm an analog enough girl and old enough that I still like to look through a photo album and not just scroll through them on my iPhone.
I imagine your entire house is either meticulous or completely cluttered, because I can see you just living a consistent life with what you do for a job, where you come home and say, I'm not doing this at my house. I'm just going to let everything go.
I try for order, but I do have a 6 and a 9-year-old little boy, so there is a certain amount of chaos.
It's gone.
Nonetheless.
Yeah.
So for digital preservation, I mean, that's a whole different world. And it is something that I have I was trained as a book and paper conservator. So I very much, my education is based in analog materials. However, my current position as the head of preservation means that I also oversee audiovisual preservation. I oversee digital preservation. This is something that libraries have really needed to embrace. With digital preservation, the easiest way to look at digital preservation is following what's called the LOCKS philosophy, LOCKSS. I'm going to get this right. Lots of copies keeps stuff safe. And basically, just multiple copies of the stuff that you want to save means that if that disk fails or if that USB thumb drive or whatever fails, you've got a second copy, because unfortunately, file failure is really common. So not keeping them one place is going to be critical. If you are really invested in thinking about digital preservation, what you want to look at is cloud storage, which is becoming more and more affordable and more available to the general public. But getting a digital copy somewhere that's not on physical media, external hard drives are great, and they are definitely worth the money as far as backing up your really important documents. But if it's stuff that you want to keep for perpetuity, looking at cloud storage as well. That way, if your house gets, you know, God forbid, hit by a tornado or flooded or whatever, you've got stuff that's outside of your building saved somewhere.
Good news. This conversation will be preserved digitally as a podcast.
Awesome. So.
Hey, our time has run out, but we appreciate you stopping by. The U of I Preservationists will have their Preservation Emporium on Saturday, April 7th at the Spurlock Museum, 1 o'clock. No cost. Bring your artifacts or questions for them. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much for having me.
We'll come back in just a moment on A Penny for Your Thoughts. All right, that's going to do it for this Penny for Your Thoughts. Thanks to all who joined us. Betsy Dirksen-Londrigan, Patsy Petrie, Sam Wheeler from the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Museum and Library, and just now Jennifer Hain-Tepper on preserving our memories and our artifacts of value. Thanks, too, to Ed Bond behind the scenes today, and to Michael Kaiser for his assist on the program today. I'm glad to be with you. Brian Barnhart back in the chair tomorrow. Illinois baseball today at 1 o'clock here on DWS, then the News Hour and Sports Talk as well. CBS News is next. This is News Talk 1400, WDWS, Champaign-Urbana, a News Gazette media station. Enjoy the rest of this sunny Wednesday. Brian's back with you tomorrow at 9 o'clock.